Good morning. It's good to see you this morning. We are so glad that you are here. I hope you will already start to pray about this upcoming season, the Easter season, both your involvement with the things we have going on at church, but also those that you might invite, include, whether that is Easter Sunday, whether that is our Good Friday Tenebrae service. I want to encourage you to start to think about and pray about people that you would extend an invitation to. And as you'll hear at the end of the sermon this morning, we're also about to enter into our Inside Out season of service. And so there's lots of ways to get involved, and I hope you will join us in that. Well, as we begin this morning, I want to start with a brief clip. This is from a commercial that comes out of Canada. I think it's for a tire company, although I don't know exactly what company it's representing. I love the commercial. And so we're going to watch this, and then I'll talk about it in a few minutes. Let's watch together.
Pick up a broken comb, run it through my thin gray hair. Though I don't have any plans tonight, I'm not going anywhere. Well, I should have seen this coming.
Come on.
Don't know why I'm surprised.
Best of us steps up, our nation stands a little taller.
All right, I'm going to try not to ugly cry right at the beginning of the sermon. That is such a fantastic commercial. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. I do want to let you know, we're winding down our one-day series. Next week is the last one, and then on Easter Sunday, we're starting a new series, the I Am Statements from the Gospel of John. I think that's going to be a wonderful series for us, and we'll start with I Am the Resurrection and the Life. And so I encourage you to start to pray for me as I prepare for that, and that should be a good study for us. But today's theme is one day of loving others. And of course, we know that's not something you can contain in one day, but as we've talked about throughout this series, the hope is that this informs us and inspires us to live out the call of Jesus a little more in the everyday of our life. And so as we look at this idea, this one day of loving others, I'm going to allow the words from 1 John, that great letter, to inspire and lead our conversation this morning. And the first challenge in the one day of loving others is this: don't just be inspired by the love of Jesus, imitate it. And we're going to look at several verses in a minute from 1 John in which we see how the love of Jesus and the love of God is our inspiration, and it should warm our hearts and it should fill us up, but it can never stop with merely inspiration. He is the one that we imitate. Jesus is the example. He is the floor model. He is the after picture of our life that God is aiming for when he claims us and begins to remake us. This is how John says it in 1 John 4:17. This is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. Isn't that an extraordinary thought? That's the goal, that's the aim, that's the expectation. In this world, we are like Jesus. Now, we know that is not about our perfection, but that is about our imitation. That is what we're aiming for. That's what we're striving for. That's what we're looking for. So when we think about a life of love, we know we're not just grabbing images of love out of the air. what we're first doing is we're looking to Jesus' kind of love to imitate. That we love sacrificially, we love unconditionally, we love without discrimination, we love everyone, we love compassionately and kindly and patiently, and we love incarnationally. Now, that's one of those big churchy kind of words that we usually save for Christmas time, because the incarnation reminds us that God took on flesh and became like us in every way to better minister to us. But that idea of incarnational love is what we can adopt too. And it reminds me of that clip that we just watched, which was a wonderful example of incarnational love. It's the kind of love when this new boy moved into the neighborhood who happened to be disabled, and the other kids were playing basketball, and one of them saw him. It was a love that welcomed him where he was, as he was, and said, "You're not only welcome to come and watch, but you can participate. And we're going to meet you at a place where your inclusion is more natural for you." I love that kind of love that was displayed. Not just come be a part, but we are going to do what we can to make it easier for you to be a part of who we are. And that's the kind of love that Jesus displays for us. He knew that we couldn't come to him without him coming to us first. That we would never fully understand God's love for us until God took on flesh and walked as we walked and lived as we lived and suffered as we suffered. That is the example of incarnational love, not that we step back and say, if you want love, you know where we are. If you want love, you've got to learn our ways, you've got to learn our language, you've got to learn our practices. Incarnational love is love that takes on the flesh of those around it so that they can experience the love of God. Maybe you remember how the Apostle Paul describes this. To the Jew, I become like a Jew to win the Jew. And to a Gentile, I become like a Gentile to win the Gentile. I'll become all things to all people so that through all possible means, I might win some. And here's the second challenge. In order to continue to imitate the love of Christ, we've got to continually reflect on the love of Christ, on the love of Jesus. So have you noticed how many times in Scripture that when we are told to love others, it is always first tied to God's love for us? Here's a few of the descriptions in 1 John 3:16. This is how we know what love is. We wouldn't know, but Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? 4:11, dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. 4:19, we love because he first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he has given us this command: anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. If we even remotely understand God's love for us, and if we truly love God, then we are never exempt from loving others. All others. We can debate best policies and practices regarding people from different nationalities and backgrounds, And we can debate best policies and practices regarding refugees and foreigners in our midst, both documented and undocumented. And given our diverse congregation and given our divided country, we probably won't agree on all points, but there is no debate as Christians whether we're called to love. That is always on the table from start to finish. We can discuss how best to approach our neighbors, our friends, our family, our in-laws, our exes, people who are different politically and economically and ethnically and religiously. But no matter how close or far our differences may be, there is no debate as to whether we're called to love. From start to finish and everywhere in between, we are always called to love. Brothers and sisters, we're called to love widows and orphans and the poor and the foreigners in our midst. We're called to love family. We're called to love ex-family. We're called to love enemies and we're called to love friends. We're called to love strangers. We're called to love those who wrong us and those who bless us. We're called to love those who agree with us and those who disagree with us. We're called to love those who are in power and those who are powerless in our society. We are called to love the worst of sinners, of whom we are the chief. We are called to love those who are hungry and thirsty and naked and in prison. We are called to love the least of these, and we are called to love them as if they are Jesus in our midst. Does that leave anyone out? When you look through Scripture, is anyone left out? And we keep coming back to the why. First John keeps coming back to the why. And the why is very simple. Because God loved us. That's where it starts and that's where it stops. Not whether they are worthy. It is what has God done. But because before we loved God, He loved us. While we were dead in our sin, He loved us. While we were powerless in our sin, God loved us. While we were enemies of God because of our rebellion, because of our action, God loved us. Before the world was made, before we were ever around, God loved us. And after our biggest sins and our repeated stumbles, God loved us. And it's Paul who says that it is Christ's love that compels us. And that's the way it should be. I like to think of it this way. Love should come more from overflow and less from obligation. I'm going to say that again. I think as Christians, love should come more from overflow and less from obligation. So I've spent some time reminding us that we are all obligated to love, but I think that's kind of the bottom of the barrel, don't you think? That at some point we move past this mindset. Well, God tells me I have to love you, so I guess I love you. Well, I'm afraid of getting in trouble if I don't love you, so I guess I love you. If that's the lever you have to pull to get you going, then pull that lever. We are obligated to love. But that's kind of at the bottom. The love that should propel us, the love that should compel us, is the love that overflows through and in us, that we recognize that God has so much love continuously pouring out over us that there is no possible way we can contain it all. So we don't even try. The love of God to us overflows through us to those around us. That should be the kind of love that pushes us forward. And the last challenge is this. and it should be pretty obvious. Commit to put love in action. We cannot stop with singing about it and praying about it and sermonizing about it and studying about it. At some point, we've got to do it. And this is what John says, "Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth." So as a church, let me say for one thing, I know many of you in so many ways are already living this out. And you are loving in action. And you are loving in truth. And you offer so much love and care and compassion. And especially to one another. And I could go on and on of stories of people in this room who are looking out for others in this room and in their life. Keep that up. God blesses that and encourages that. But I also want to remind us that we have a calling not just to care for one another, but we are called to live for the sake of the world, to serve on behalf of the community around us, and not just the faith community, although that is a part of it, but those who are not a part of this faith community. And so every year, in the weeks and months that follow Easter, we enter into our Inside Out season of service. And many of you have been around for this as we've done that. But if you have not, let me tell you, I'm going to tell you both a little bit about that. And I'm also going to tell you why we tie that in to this Easter season. So again, just like this one day challenge, the hope is, the goal is that these things we do as a church would propel us to lives of service throughout the year. But we've tied this into the Easter season because Easter reminds us something important about the story of our faith that we're trying to live out on a regular basis. And that is this: the Easter story, the story of the resurrection of Jesus, is not just a story about the promise that one day after this life is over, we will be raised to a new life, although that is a wonderful and glorious part of the promise. But the Easter story reminds us that we are supposed to be the kind of people that regularly die to self and are raised to new life now, to new purposes now, that we live the Easter life, that we live the resurrected life. And this is how 1 John 3:14 says it. "We know that we have passed from death to life because we love each other. And anyone who does not love remains in death." Isn't that a powerful reminder? We know we have already passed from death to life if we love each other. That is a sign that new creation is among us. That is a sign that God is doing his new thing within us. So I want to tell you about a few of the things that are coming up on Inside Out. We're going to have some sign-up sheets and information sheets in the foyer starting today, and they'll be here in the coming weeks. And I hope you'll consider and pray about multiple ways that you can get connected. One is we are involved again in the Pack Shack and Feed the Funnel, and that's going to be Sunday, April 23rd. And so if you're not familiar with that, we get about 80 to 100 of our people in the gym, and we're laughing, and there's music playing, and people are singing and dancing along, and we are filling about 10,000 meals in an hour. For people who need a nutritious, easy meal to put together. It is a wonderful organization, the Pack Shack, and the Feed the Funnel is a great experience for all those who've been a part of that. And so I want to encourage you to think about that. This one is a great one for kids also, that they can get involved, and that's going to be on April 23rd, and there should be a sign-up sheet in the foyer after the service. And my hope is that this kind of experience may trigger something in some of you to do more to help with those in need of a meal on a regular basis, that it propels us further, not just for one night, but through other times of the year, and great helping organizations that address that. We've got more information sheets in the foyer about Silver City Church, and you may remember a few weeks ago or a couple of months ago, Greg Sublett came, one of the ministers there. This is a ministry that we help support as a church financially and through people power, and he reminded us several things that we can do as a church. We've got a few of our people that signed up after he came that are going to help with their summer camp. I think they could use more. He reminded us of their mentoring program, and you can get more information and learn about that, which is a wonderful thing. Something that more folks can do and a lot have done is we have life groups that sign up to provide the meal on Sunday night. And several of our groups already do that, but you can get the information sheet. There's a link online that shows you which of those Sundays are still available. And so I would encourage you, especially if your life group hasn't done that in a while, or you forgot that that was an opportunity, there was an option there, that look into that. That is a wonderful ministry, and hopefully beyond this time, but in the coming months and throughout the year, that's something you can do. On Saturday, April 29th, we are having another one of our Night Owls events. We've done this for a couple of years now. It is a wonderful ministry, one of the best ministries that we have in this church. And if you aren't familiar or if you've forgotten, this is our night out program for kids with special needs and their typically developing siblings. And we usually have at minimum a 2-to-1 ratio of volunteers to kids. And it is meant to provide a wonderful, safe, fun environment for those kids, and also give the parents of these kids a much-needed night away. It is a wonderful event, and I hope you'll sign up for that Saturday, April 29th. Today, coincidentally, if you didn't know, is World Autism Awareness Day, and the theme for that, if you don't know it, is Light It Up Blue, and so I've got the blue on today. Our whole family has the blue on today, representing that. And I can tell you that this kind of ministry to families with kids of special needs is so significant, and not just for the few times a year that we do it, but throughout the year. There is a great need in this regard in the churches across the area. And so my hope is that this might inspire some of you to think beyond the few times a year that we host this event. I know Christy's looked into this. Charlotte Yates has helped with Night Owls, and my wife has been doing a great job of researching ways that churches can be special needs friendly on a regular basis because of the challenges that presents to families. Okay, so I want to end this morning with introducing something that may be new to some of you, and that is the Walk for the Waiting. And there is a nonprofit ministry called The Call, which helps with this. And there are others that help with this. The Call and the others that work with this are specifically trying to address the needs of kids who need either fostering in Arkansas or a permanent home through adoption. And The Call is not only trying to work on behalf of the kids, but The Call's mission is to help challenge the church and encourage the church and equip the church to step up in that void, in that gap, to better address the needs of all of these kids who are in some ways on the outside looking in, who are looking for a foster family or for a permanent family, a place to call home. And so that event, there'll be signups in the foyer, and that's happening Saturday, April 29th at War Memorial Stadium, 8 a.m. The walk is a 5K walk. You do not have to be fast. You do not have to have great endurance. Some of you may not be able to help yourself as to how fast you go, but you can go out there Kids can participate. I would encourage life groups to consider going. This is both to raise awareness and to raise money. And so it is a fundraiser, but I would encourage you to consider, prayerfully consider getting involved with that. Now, here's something you may or may not know is we have quite a few families in this church who are touched by this issue in a variety of ways. So some have adoption in their family, their background, they've adopted, they have kids who've adopted or extended family who have adopted. We have others who have fostered kids at times, who are in the process of fostering kids or who have explored this. This touches a lot of our folks. And part of the mission of the call is not only to try to encourage those who might feel this calling from God to foster, but also for the other members of the church who may not be in a position or feel called to do that ministry, to be a source of encouragement, blessing, support to those who are, because there are challenges involved. There are needs involved that we can help address, even if you're not in a place in your life where you're looking to invite those folks to invite a foster child into your life or to adopt a child. Grace Workman has done a great job of being our liaison to this ministry and introducing us to new aspects of it. But we also have some families who've been a part of this journey. And so to conclude this morning, I wanted to ask one of those families to come up and share just a little bit from their perspective. Jeff, can I grab your handheld mic, by the way? I promise I'll give it back. So we've invited Adam and Stephanie Carter to come up. And you may or may not know that those who go through some of this process, there are certain things that they can share and there are certain things that they can't share. And rather than me sharing what I'm not supposed to share, I'm going to allow Adam and Stephanie, you guys come over just a little bit, pass that back and forth. Where are we going? How are we doing this? You want to stand beside him or we can, is that awkward? Is anyone else uncomfortable? Okay. So you guys have been connected to the call and learning more about fostering and adopting for a while. You've gone through a process of learning a little bit more. Would you tell us a little bit about what led you to that and what that experience has been like for you?
Well, for about 2 years, Adam and I tried to have a second child, and we had a hard time struggling. So it's always been in my heart to adopt a child eventually. And we didn't think it'd be the second child, but so we decided looking into adoption. Well, he was gone on a hunting trip, and I thought, well, I don't know if he'll be into adopting because I know it's a lot of money. And we never knew that through the foster care system, you can pretty much adopt with no charge. So I had a friend that mentioned the call to me, and while he was gone, I went to a call meeting. And so while I was at that meeting, I discovered that adoption through foster care was no charge at all. And he has more to add to it.
Adoption's nothing new to me. The church I grew up in sponsored an orphanage in Zambia, and several families, including my own, adopted kids from that orphanage in Zambia. So in my mind, I'd always thought when we decided to consider adoption that it would be an international adoption. Well, we started looking into that, and we found out that it's gotten very difficult legally and gotten very expensive. To adopt from the orphanage where my parents adopted my sister now costs around $50,000. And that's becoming more and more common in third world countries as they realize that kind, generous Americans want to adopt kids from their country. They started making it a moneymaker for the poor countries, which is understandable but not affordable for us. So that turned us, after she told me about this meeting, to looking at foster care in here. And while we were in the process of this meeting, I learned several stats about foster care in Arkansas that really changed my heart towards looking at the foster care system. The Federal Department of Human Services in 2014 ranked Arkansas's foster care system as the fourth worst in the country because of how overwhelmed and overburdened it is. The state has some statistics that come from the end of 2016. There are currently 5,200 kids placed in foster care in Arkansas. A total of 1,300 of those come from Pulaski County alone, so 20% of the foster kids are from our county. About half those kids end up getting placed in foster homes outside of our county or in some cases in another state because there are not enough foster homes in Pulaski County to keep them here where they're from, which makes it a bigger burden on the state and the caseworkers that work with them, but also on the families as they go through these separations. There are 280 foster care homes in Pulaski County, and to meet the needs of the foster kids, we need almost over 600 foster homes. So we have less than half of what we need in Pulaski County. There are currently, the average age of a child in foster care is 8 years old in Arkansas, and there are currently 800 families in Arkansas waiting to adopt a baby. That's really understandable for those people, but at the same time, it's frustrating for those older kids, because if a child is not adopted by the age of four, they have an 80% chance of staying in foster care until they're declared a legal adult at the age of 18, or in some cases, that gets pushed back to 21 because of certain special needs that the child may have. The last thing I wanted to touch on real quick is this is a stat that the CALL ministry did, and they did the math on this. If one family in every five churches adopted or fostered, all those kids would have a permanent home. And that's not one out of five families in our church. That's one out of one family in every five churches. Within a mile and a half radius of where we're sitting right now, there are five churches. And if one family in any of those five did what we're trying to do and consistently did that across the state, we would solve the foster care crisis that Arkansas is having right now.
All right, tell us about this picture.
Okay. Here, you tell. Okay. This was your brainchild. You talked about it.
These are our sons, Easton, and the son in the Batman shirt is our pre-adoptive son that we're adopting, Blake. What the Walk for the Waiting that Bert talked about for a little bit is a fundraiser to raise money for three nonprofit organizations called The CALL, Immerse Arkansas, and Project Zero. Basically what it is, it's you go to, let's see here, it's on May the 6th, we go to War Memorial, and it's a, not a 5K, but a family walk around, fun walk around War Memorial Stadium. We're raising money for The CALL, Immerse, and Project Zero. And what these different organizations do, The CALL, is they help train different people to go for the foster care system who wants to be foster parents or adoptive parents. The Immerse is a nonprofit organization that helps youth in transition homes that haven't been adopted yet. And what Project Zero is they have different events for foster cares, for foster care children, just to have like fun once a month. And people that are looking to adopt children can go to these events, meet these children, and hopefully find a child that they would like to adopt through this event. So what we did with, we wanted to get Easton and Blake involved in raising money for this race, and we had a cookie and lemonade stand, and they had a lot of fun with this. They raised about $279. Some of that was through online donations, and some was at the cookie and lemonade stand, but they just stood out there that Saturday and held their signs and had people come up and buy their cookies and lemonade, so it was a lot of fun for them. There's also some other ways that you can get involved with The CALL, and Adam's got some of those for you here.
Go ahead and put up that slide if you've got it. Hopefully you can see that. That is on The CALL's website. These are different ways that you can get involved with helping with the foster care system if you're not called to adopt or foster. And I'm not going to go through all these for the sake of time, but I'm going to hit on the ones that I called The CALL on Friday afternoon and got the ideas of what were the ones that were their biggest needs that you can help out the most with. So the second one down on the list is The CALL Mall. There are several churches that participate in this, and basically what they do is they offer a Goodwill-type store out of their church, but it's not a store. It's all free. You go and you donate your old clothes or your old furniture, the same as you would at Goodwill or Savers or one of those low-cost stores. But then they provide all of this material free for fostering families or for pre-adoptive families so that financial burden can be relieved from them. The other thing you can do is you can become a DHS office volunteer. This requires a little bit of state training, and The CALL helps coordinate this. But one of the biggest challenges that DHS has is that when kids are taken from the family and come into their care, a lot of the times, especially in the evenings or on weekends, they don't have enough staff to care for those kids until they can get them placed in a foster home. And that can take up to 48 hours sometimes. So they need volunteers in their offices at all hours of the day to sit with those kids until they find an opening in a foster care home where they can be placed. The other thing you can do, obviously, is pray. The biggest need they have, especially with teenage kids, is mentoring, kind of like what Silver City does. The teenagers need mentoring from adults who will teach them how to function out on their own once they get out of the foster care system, because they're pretty much, once they leave foster care, they're on their own. They have no family support. There is no government system in place to support them as they begin their adult lives. And the only way they get that help is if some private citizen or person comes along and decides to play that mentoring role and kind of teach them how to become a functioning adult in society. And then finally, the Pride Trainer, which is about the fourth one from the bottom of that list. Pride training is state-mandated training that you have to go to if you want to open your home for adoption or foster care. It's a 40-hour training course that you have to go through to learn all of DHS's policies and to get some background training to how to prepare you with some of the issues these kids deal with. And one of the biggest things the call does for families that want to foster or adopt is that they provide that training for free. That's one of the great things about this ministry. If you want to do that training and you do it either straight through the state or if you do it through a private adoption agency, you have to pay for it. But one of the ministries that the call does is they provide that training to foster parents for free so that they can avoid that financial burden. And they need volunteers who are willing to step up and teach that course. And you have to go through some state training to become a licensed trainer for that. But that's another way as well that people can help out. And those are the biggest needs that the call sees right now in helping out with the foster care situation.
And I forgot to mention, out in the lobby, Grace had some of these earlier. These are the pamphlets about the Walk for the Waiting. And if we would love for you to come, and if you'd like to sign up on our team, you're welcome to join us and help us raise money. But if you're not able to come that day, you can always sign up to donate money towards, the boys have a page, and I know Grace and Christy and I, we're all trying to raise money as well. We're all going to are involved in the walk. So if you'd like to donate towards us, you can, or we'd just love for you to come and participate as well.
Right. Let's show them our support and appreciation. Thank you. I'm also glad she said the right date, because for whatever reason, I put the wrong date on here. So when you go and look at the information, that's on Saturday the 6th, and that is a great thing. So my encouragement to us as a church, as we enter into this Inside Out season of service, is I would love for you to get connected to some of the things that I've just told you about, shared with you, but I would also love for you to pray as an individual, to pray as a family, to dream together and pray together as a life group as to what you may do. There's lots of wonderful ways that you can go out and be salt and light in the world, and that is our calling as the people of God. And so I want to be a supportive place for those families who are a part of this process. I want us to be a church that makes that easier for others who are thinking about that and considering that. And especially, we want to be a church to where there is no doubt that while we are not perfect, we are a reflection of Jesus in our community around us. And so we're going to close in song now. We're going to sing, "I Will Follow," and that is our goal. We're going to try to follow God wherever He leads us in this life of love. Let's stand and sing.